Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, February 14th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, UTPB hosts Natural Resources Committee hearing. House Natural Resources Committee comes to epicenter of U.S. oil and gas, by Mella McEwen. For the first time in its history, the University of Texas Permian Basin hosted a congressional hearing as four congressmen visited the Permian Basin. I had the chairman of the House Committee on Natural Resources come to the area to give them the right understanding of what we need to do to support the domestic industry and improve energy and national security, said Representative August Pfluger, the San Angelo Republican from District 11, which includes Midland, Odessa, and other parts of the Permian Basin. Pfluger was joined at UTPB's College of Engineering, next to the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, by Representative Bruce Westerman, Republican Arkansas, chairman of the committee, Pete Stauber, Republican Minnesota, chair of the Subcommittee on Energy and Mineral Resources, and Representative Tom Tiffany, Republican Wisconsin, chair of the Subcommittee on Federal Lands. The four expressed regret they were not joined in their tour of West Texas and New Mexico oil fields by their counterparts in the Democratic Party. "We want bipartisan discussion. We want to talk across the aisle," said Westerman. "This is not a partisan issue. It's providing reliable, affordable energy families can enjoy and clean energy for our allies like Ukraine. If they're willing to attack the industry, they need to see it." The focus of their visit was to see how federal energy production supports local communities. Among the three testifying before the panel was New Mexico State Senator David Gallegos, who represents Eddy and Lee counties, two of the most prolific counties in the Permian Basin. Gallegos detailed for the representatives how the state's oil and gas industry generated 42% of New Mexico's government income, $5.8 billion for the general fund, and another $5 billion to other state and local tax revenues in the last fiscal year. Unless the Biden administration fixes its permitting process to resume leasing on federal lands and stops its regulatory onslaught, he warned those funds could dry up, leaving New Mexico high and dry. Doug Ackerman, president and chief executive officer of the New Mexico Oil and Gas Association, pointed out that the billions in revenues from the oil and gas industry fund New Mexico's education system, fund new roads and highways, and allows for more law enforcement and first responders on the street to protect New Mexico citizens. "This goes hand in hand with environmental stewardship," Ackerman said. "We are your neighbors, and we take pride in producing clean energy." Tracy Bentley, president and chief executive of the Permian Strategic Partnership, testified how 20 oil and gas companies, from upstream to midstream to service companies, came together to make the Permian Basin communities where they live and work better places in terms of education, health care, workforce, housing, and transportation. In the 5 years since its inception, she said the PSP has invested nearly $125 million, leveraging that into $975 million through collaborative investments. "Last year alone," she said, "the PSP invested $32.6 million in education, workforce, healthcare, and road building initiatives." No one asked those member companies to invest $25 million each, she noted. And if her member companies see their revenues choked off, PSP investments will also fall. we are in the midst of the world's largest and most secure energy-producing basin. That's due to the hard-working men and women who go out every day to produce oil and natural gas. The truth of the matter is, we know the world will need our energy for decades to come, she said. She continued, as we hear the condemnation of the industry and the need to move away from traditional energy, that's not just possible. Yet my neighbors get up every day, go to work, and grow oil and gas production, and they're happy to do so. But they do so knowing they're under that shadow of condemnation and desire to move away from fossil fuels. Westerman said he hopes to have a full energy package come out of the House by the end of March, and he said he hopes any energy package will have bipartisan support and bicameral support. This article is entitled, County Leaders Want to Check Donated Books for Banned Titles, by Ben Schaffer. A discussion about Midland County Public Library books containing subjects like critical race theory and transgenderism took place Monday at the Midland County Commissioners' Court meeting. Acknowledge library donations was the agenda item being discussed, as Debbie Garza, library director for Midland County Public Library, shared a document with the court that showed books accepted and discarded as donations by the county library. Precinct 4 Commissioner Diane Anderson asked Garza if there is a list of books that Midland County will not allow in their library. There's 853 books that are being used for critical race theory or for advocating for transgender sex changes, she said. In 2021, Governor Greg Abbott signed a bill that banned the teaching of critical race theory in Texas public schools. The Texas Tribune reported in June 2021 that opponents to the bill say its passing limits honest conversation about race and racism in American society. Anderson wanted to make sure that the library would pay close attention to the anonymous donations flowing in, so books containing these topics could not be picked up by young children. Garza said she has trained library staff to check each donated book and decide if those books should be placed on the shelves of her library based on a range of criteria. However, she said, if the court does not want to accept the library donations provided to them, they have that right. County Judge Terry Johnson and Anderson wanted to know if they provided a list of books to be kept out of the library, that library administration would follow that guide. You, Garza, may have someone there at the library who is all about critical race theory, sex change, because that's what they choose to accept. And if they're the ones approving these books, then that's not good, Anderson said. We need to have a list and say, these books will not be in our library because we don't want to expose our children to any of this stuff without their parents' approval. Garza agreed that while everyone has different world views, including library staff, they try their best to be objective in deciding which donated books will be made available to the local public. She added that the Midland County Public Library is one that serves everyone in the community. Anderson said that before she makes an official ruling on the library donations, she would review the list of books herself and was willing to provide the library with a list of 853 titles that shouldn't be in the public library. If your staff can't do it, I can do it, she said. County Judge Terry Johnson agreed with Commissioner Anderson. If we're supposed to be the keeper of the gate, then we'll keep the gate, he said. There was no vote taken on the library donations. This article is entitled Senior Apartment Complex in West Midland on Council Agenda, by Stuart Doreen. The developer of multifamily housing for seniors just south of Andrews Highway in West Midland is likely to get opposition during Tuesday's Midland City Council meeting. Brad Schwab is seeking a change in zoning from light industrial district to multifamily dwelling district to permit a senior multifamily housing development. The plan offered, according to the city, shows 69,620 square feet of continuous space for up to 200 units for seniors, age and income restricted. There will be 89 one-bedroom units, 111 two-bedroom units, common areas, a dog park, and 357 parking spaces. The complex would be located between Woodcrest Drive and Idlewild Drive, generally north of Douglas Avenue. It would be located to the south of Boot Barn, 4803 Andrews Highway, West Texas Automotive, 4703 Andrews Highway, and the West Texas Food Bank, 1601 West Cliff Drive. City staff recommends approval of the zone change, subject to conditions, and the City of Midland Planning and Zoning Commission approved the request last week. The requested MF22 zoning will not negatively impact the public health, safety, and welfare at this location, according to the Zone Change Planned District Amendment Site Plan Approval Application. The need for affordable senior housing is high, given recent housing cost increases, rapid inflation, and interest rate hikes. Midland's housing values and local rents exceed what many seniors on fixed incomes can afford to pay. The Midland City Council agenda packet includes multiple letters in opposition of the senior housing facility. Reasons for opposition include that the land should be used for single-family housing, the impact of low-income housing on property values, the potential increase in crime, traffic congestion, and the number of multiple family dwellings in the area. The owner of a dance cheer business in the area wrote that if apartments were approved, this would make the parents of these girls feel unsafe. There needs to be a lot of questions answered before this zone change should be approved. This article is entitled Gusts Up to 50 Miles Per Hour Forecast for NWS Midland by Stuart Doreen. Wind will gust up to 50 miles per hour this week in Midland, according to the National Weather Service website. On Tuesday and Wednesday, the forecast called for gusts as high as 50 miles per hour and patchy blowing dust. Sustained winds are expected to top out at 35 miles per hour each day. This will be a regional wind event, as the NWS is calling for gusts up to 100 miles per hour in the Guadalupe Mountains. A high wind warning remains in effect for the Guadalupe, Delaware, and Davis Mountains and adjacent plains beginning tonight, lasting through Tuesday evening, the National Weather Service reported on its website. Wind advisories are in effect for much of the region outside of the warning area. Very strong winds will make driving difficult. Blowing dust is possible in the plains. This article is entitled Support Options for Pfluger Event in Midland Range from $500 to $23,200 by Stuart Doreen. A reception to honor Congressman August Pfluger is scheduled for February 24th at the home of Lisa Noel Wagner in Midland. The event, according to a copy of the invitation, will support the Pfluger Victory Committee and features at least four support options, including ACE, $23,200 a couple, or $11,600 for an individual, Commander, $13,200 a couple, or $6,600 for an individual, Flight Lead, $6,600 a couple, or $3,300 for an individual. Pilot, $1,000 a couple, or $500 for an individual. Checks can be made payable to Pfluger Victory Committee. Those listed as part of the host committee, according to the invitation, include Ernest Angelo, Vicky and S. Javed Anwar, Penny and Don Evans, Paula and Jim Henry, Julie and Bill Kent, Amy and Tim Leach, Gwyn and Don Parks, Brenda and Travis Stice, and Jamie and Kyle Stallings. All totaled, there are more than 60 couples or individuals listed as part of the host committee, according to the invitation. Pfluger is a San Angelo Republican whose congressional district includes Midland, Odessa, and San Angelo. "We are absolutely raising funds to fight back against the Democrats who literally want to abolish the oil and gas industry, unleash chaos at the border, and destroy our conservative values," Pfluger spokesperson Lissa Bell wrote in an email. This article is entitled, "Popular $10 billion Tax Credit for Clean Energy Makers Returns," by Ari Natter, Bloomberg. The Biden administration is restarting a popular tax credit for manufacturers of solar panels, wind turbines, fuel cells, and other clean energy equipment after getting a $10 billion infusion from the Inflation Reduction Act. Clean energy projects that expand domestic manufacturing, reduce industrial greenhouse gas emissions, or help create a domestic supply chain for critical minerals can begin applying for the Advanced Energy Tax Credit at the end of May, the Treasury Department announced Monday. The program provides a 30% tax credit for technologies, including carbon capture systems, grid modernization projects, clean hydrogen production, and electric or fuel cell vehicles, as well as equipment that reduces emissions from industrial facilities, the department said in a notice. The first round of funding, some $4 billion, includes $1.6 billion devoted to projects in areas where coal mines and coal-fired power plants have shut down. The qualifying Advanced Energy Project Credit was first created as part of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act in 2009, which provided $2.3 billion at the time. The program quickly ran out of cash, and efforts to refund it stalled in Congress until it was included in Democrats' marquee climate bill last year, which provided some $370 billion in climate funding. In addition, the Treasury Department announced it is establishing an Inflation Reduction Act program to provide up to 20% in an additional bonus tax credit for wind and solar projects located in low-income communities that could increase the total value of the incentive to as much as 50% of the project's cost. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, "U.S. to sell 26 million more barrels from oil reserve," by Jennifer Jacobs and Ari Natter, Bloomberg. The Biden administration plans to sell more crude oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, fulfilling budget directives mandated years ago that it had sought to stop as oil prices have stabilized. The congressionally mandated sale will amount to 26 million barrels of crude, according to people familiar with the matter. The sale is in accordance with a budget mandate enacted in 2015 for the current fiscal year, said a spokesperson for the Department of Energy. The Energy Department has sought to stop some of the sales required by the 2015 legislation, so that it can refill the emergency reserve, which currently has about 371 million barrels. After this latest release, the reserve will dip to about 345 million barrels. Biden officials decided last year to tap 180 million barrels from the Strategic Oil Reserve in an effort to ease supply issues, after Russia invaded Ukraine, upending global oil flows and sending crude above $100 a barrel. Some Republicans have criticized the Biden administration for that drawdown, which was the biggest release ever and helped drain the SPR to its lowest level since 1983. Critics admonished the move as a political stunt intended to combat rising gasoline prices ahead of midterm elections. Biden officials have since spoken with energy companies about purchasing oil to refill the SPR when oil prices approach $70 a barrel. The U.S. House last month passed legislation meant to curb the Energy Secretary's ability to use the reserve unless the government increases the amount of federal lands available for gas and oil drilling. Other congressionally required releases, about 140 million barrels slated for fiscal years 2024 through 2027, were canceled at the Energy Department's behest after lawmakers in December approved a provision in a giant spending bill. West Texas Intermediate, the U.S. benchmark for crude, fell 1% to trade near $79 a barrel after the announcement of more barrels. This is the obituary column. Tuesday, February 14th. Dudley Montgomery, April 20th, 1931 to February 9th, 2023. Dudley Keith Montgomery died in his home on February 9th. He was born in 1931 to Fred and Lucille Montgomery. Dudley was preceded in death by his parents, Fred and Lucille, and his brothers William, Bob, Fred, and Joe. He is survived by his wife of 66 years, Patty Holcomb Montgomery, and their three daughters, Cecile Montgomery of Fort Worth, Cynthia Montgomery of Dallas, and Amy Miller and husband Trey Miller of Lubbock, as well as his grandson, Montgomery K. Miller of St. Louis, Missouri. He is also survived by sisters-in-law Ida Montgomery, Florence Cummings, and Nora Gray, and husband Deveril Gray, in addition to many nieces, nephews, and cousins. Graveside services will be held at Mount Evergreen Cemetery in Pecos, Texas, at 1 p.m. on Thursday, February 16th. Family visitation will be at Sanders Funeral Home, Friday, February 17th, from 5 to 7 p.m. A memorial service will be held in Ford Chapel at the First Baptist Church of Lubbock, Saturday, February 18th at 11 a.m. Additional information can be found at www.sandersfuneralhome.com. A webcast of services will be available, as well as an online guestbook. Francis Gunkel Boyles, January 11, 1952 to February 10, 2023. Frances Marie Gunkel Boyles was born January 11, 1952 in Elk City, Oklahoma. Her parents, Jack and Ada Gunkel, moved to the booming town of Odessa in 1954. She is preceded in death by her parents, Jack and Ada Gunkel. She is survived by her husband, Russ, son, Stephen, daughter-in-law Michelle, and grandson Bruce. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, February 16th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home in Odessa. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, February 17th at Redeemer Lutheran Church in Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Francis Lamoyne Harold Bradshaw. Francis Lamoyne Harold Bradshaw, 93 of Midland, went to be with her Lord on Saturday, January 21st in Midland. Lamoyne was born January 12, 1930 in Mineral Wells, Texas, to Dan and Vera Harrell. She married Jimmy Charles Bradshaw on October 26, 1974. Survivors include cousin Carolyn Kaysen of Fort Worth, stepdaughter Debbie Harding of Carrollton, stepdaughter Cindy Fox of Abilene, as well as four grandchildren. Lemoyne is preceded in death by her husband, Jimmy Charles Bradshaw. A memorial service will be held on Saturday, February 18th at 11 a.m. at First Baptist Church Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Darla J. Rogers. Darla J. Rogers, 61, of Midland, passed away February 12th. There will be no service. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Jimmy Allen Padgett. Jimmy Allen Padgett, 84, of Midland, passed away February 9th. Funeral service will be held at 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, February 14th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Martin Carlton. Martin Carlton, 74, of Midland, passed away January 27th. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, February 18th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Pamela Lewis. Pamela Lewis, 64, of Midland, passed away February 11th. Celebration of Life will be held at 2 p.m. Sunday, February 19th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning and happy Valentine's Day. This is Kim and it's Tuesday, February 14th, 2023. UTPB hosts first ever congressional hearing. For the first time, the University of Texas Permian Basin hosted a congressional hearing. The congressional hearing took place Monday afternoon at the University of Texas Permian Basin Engineering Building and started with a press conference followed by the hearing focused on federal energy production supports local communities. The four congressmen, August Pfluger, Republican, San Angelo, Tom Tiffany, Republican, Wisconsin, Pete Stauber, Republican, Minnesota, and Bruce Westerman, Republican, Arkansas, each spoke. It's really my pleasure to introduce what you are about to witness in this hearing, which is a decision on how this industry truly helps our local communities and why we need to be doing it here, Pfluger said during the press conference. We do it more efficiently. We do it cleaner. We do it better than any other country. Westerman, the chair for Natural Resources Committee, said worldwide energy consumption is still dominated by coal, oil, and natural gas. We are going to use more oil and gas, Westerman said. We are going to use more coal. If you look at the world consumption of energy by fuel type, coal, oil, and gas are still the dominant sources of energy. We need to embrace all kinds of energy, but since we know we are going to use more fossil fuels, why don't we get it from here? The three witnesses for the congressional hearing were New Mexico Republican Senator David Gallegos, New Mexico Oil and Gas Association President and CEO Doug Ackerman, and Permian Basin Strategic Partnership President and CEO Tracy Bentley. As detailed in the written statement provided by Gallegos, he stated in fiscal year 2022 that oil and gas has contributed $10.8 billion to New Mexico State and local coffers, more than double the previous high fiscal year, 2021. Oil and gas contributions make up an average of one-third of New Mexico State budget, Ackerman's written statement details New Mexico's oil and gas industry generated more than $63.3 billion in oil and gas revenues in fiscal year 22, an increase of 132% from fiscal year 2021. Bentley's written statement showed that in 5 years since PSP was founded, it has directly invested nearly $125 million in projects across the Permian Basin and contributed to collaborative investments totaling $975 million. A second congressional hearing for energy and commerce on American energy expansion, improving local economies and communities' way of life, will begin at 10:30 a.m. Thursday at Bush Convention Center. Kathy McMorris Rogers, RWA, who is the chair of the Energy and Commerce Committee, Jeff Duncan, Republican, South Carolina, who served on the Energy and Commerce Committee, are scheduled to attend. Tribune to Livestream Choice Discussion. Texas residents will get a sample of school choice during a Texas Tribune panel set for Thursday. Four leaders in Texas education, including Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray, will discuss what is best for Texas students at the Tribune event, set for 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., titled School Choice, What's Right for Texas? It is a free, in-person event at the Tribune's Studio 919 at 919 Congress Avenue on the 6th floor. It will also be live-streamed at texastribune.org/events and available for on-demand viewing afterward at texastribune.org. Along with Murray, speakers include Laura Colangelo, Executive Director, Texas Private Schools Association, Michelle Smith, Executive Director, Raise Your Hand Texas, Randon Steinhauer, National School Choice Director, Young Americans for Liberty, and Brian Lopez, Public Education Reporter for the Texas Tribune. Lopez said since pushing an agenda of parental rights last year, Governor Greg Abbott offered a more specific idea of what he would like to see. For some, for top elective officials like Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and Governor Greg Abbott, this is a priority for them. Most recently, Governor Abbott made it clear that he would want an education savings account type program. The education savings account would let parents use state funds for their children's private education or for homeschooling materials. That's the one that's gaining traction in the state capital in Austin, Lopez said. There's one bill that would create these kinds of education savings accounts, by Senator Mays Middleton, a Republican from Galveston. The bill is Senate Bill 176. We'll see where that goes, Lopez said. Then there is the debate over race, gender, books in classrooms, and banning of certain LGBTQ books. They're confident, but they still have to work with the rural Republicans that have kind of been against school choice just because their schools are the only school in the area. They kind of serve as the hub of employment, so they're adverse to anything that might pull their kids out of their schools and lead to loss of funding and anything else down the road that could close them down, Lopez said. Anytime you talk to public school advocates, thinking organizations that advocate for more funding for public schools, they have that sort of abrasiveness. I don't think anyone has said anything about destroying public education, but definitely they're not happy that this is being considered, Lopez said. One of the sticking points is using taxpayer dollars to potentially fund private and religious schools while people will still have to pay their property taxes for public schools. Some parents are against the lack of accountability something like this would bring. When I talk to rural lawmakers, they're kind of against it, but there hasn't been a big push or movement against this the way that school choice advocates or school choice people have been pushing it. It hasn't been the same kind of response, Lopez said. He added that it will be interesting to see how the politics play out, whether people feel they've done enough to stop school choice. One of the other things from talking to lawmakers and political experts, there's a big fight right now or a big push for teacher raises, Lopez said. He added that there could be a swap where teachers get raises if school choice legislation passes. It will be interesting to see how the negotiations go down, but it definitely does seem a little different this session. It feels like people in that circle that want more school choice policies are a little bit more confident. Governor Abbott, since he started pushing this parental rights agenda last year, recently came out and said that kind of policy he would support, which he has never done, Lopez said. Full agenda on tap for City Council Tuesday. Tired of egg prices? Change to hen ordinance may be coming. The Odessa City Council plans to discuss a wide variety of topics during its work session and council meeting Tuesday, and recycling, roads, hens, a sports complex, and an $862,000 ODC agreement are among them. During the council's workshop meeting, which is scheduled for 3 p.m. in council chambers, City Engineer Yervand Himeakon will talk to the council about the possibility of using a pavement restoration technique instead of seal coating 21 miles of the city streets at a cost of $647,451. According to Himeakon, the product that would be used would cut the city's preventative maintenance program cost in half per square foot and offers a good service life. It is designed to be applied to low-volume streets, and our intent is to use it on many of the streets that have not been seal-coated or have not been sealed in several years, Himeakon wrote in documents supplied to the council. Himeakon also wants to ask the city for $628,459 for an asphalt sealer that he says would extend the life of pavement for several years. In other road-related matters, Assistant City Manager Aaron Smith plans to suggest amending the city's 2020 Master Thoroughfare Plan. He wants to eliminate the connection of the Desert Ridge subdivision to the Sunset Heights neighborhood and the connection of Dawn to Yukon. According to documents submitted to the council, Smith said he thinks there's sufficient access to the neighborhood via 52nd Street and Grandview, and eliminating the connections would make the neighborhoods safer. Odessa Development Corporation Chairman Chris Crow also plans to talk about a proposed economic development agreement with Taylor Sudden Services. Taylor, a family-owned heavy-duty equipment company that is nearly 100 years old, wants to spend $2.4 million to expand their current facility on Interstate 20 by adding an 18-bay maintenance facility, a paint booth, and more office space, according to Crow. Once done, the company would add 24 full-time jobs to its current staff of 31. The ODC has already approved a 5-year $862,579 grant and now needs council approval. The council is also scheduled to discuss amending the city's ordinances so people can own up to 4 backyard hens. Under the proposed ordinance, the hens would have to be in an enclosed structure with 3 or more sides and a cover. It would also have to have a floor and a door that would allow them to move back and forth between the coop and an enclosed yard. Hay, grain, feed, and all other food sources would have to be stored in secure containers, and it couldn't be fed on the ground, according to the proposed ordinance. The city would charge $25 for a backyard hen permit and multiple pet permit, and $15 for wing clipping. During the Council's regular meeting, which starts at 6 p.m., the Council is scheduled to discuss hiring a new marketing company for the ODC, Current Media Partners, at a cost of $400,000 annually. CMP has already been working on a marketing plan with a suggested tagline of Only Odessa. One of the founders of the company, Christy Calicote, told the ODC board last week they want to make sure manufacturing, logistical, carbon capture, renewable energy, and mining companies know Odessa is the only place they want to relocate to. They looked at marketing efforts in Amarillo, Abilene, Lubbock, Tyler, Austin, and Frisco to make sure they can set Odessa apart, Calicote said. Public Works Director Tom Kerr is also scheduled to update the council on a meeting he had with BRU Recycling Services. The company informed the city that roughly 50% of the materials in the recycling bin is contaminated. The city currently disposes of roughly 100,000 tons of garbage a year and about 700 tons of recyclables. According to Kerr, the city now has three options. It can discontinue recycling services, it can scale back recycling to just the time machine location, or it can scale back recycling to the time machine location and a few community collection sites. If either of the last two options are chosen, all of the locations would be fenced and gated so the site and materials could be monitored to significantly limit contamination. The city is also set to discuss hiring Synergy Sports Global for $15,000 to conduct a sports complex feasibility study. The company, which also develops and manages multi-sports facilities and recreation centers, helped create a $25 million sports complex in Heath, a $125 million complex in Colorado, and a $40 million project in New Jersey. According to a PowerPoint presentation they gave the Parks and Recreation Board, Synergy would study the area's demographics and socioeconomic sports participation rates, competitors, the size and components of the city's courts and fields, possible partnership and construction costs. They'd also determine potential sites and create an operating budget. Calls and an email to interim city manager Agapito Bernal for this story were not returned. The city council will be meeting in executive session to discuss a lawsuit that was filed against the city in February 2022. The families of two teens, Keenan Gage Garms, 19, and Evan James Hill, 18, are suing the city, claiming they were killed in a wreck caused by an obstructed stop sign. Garms and Hill were both in the Ford and were killed, as was Nadine. Demorian Brew, 18, who was in the Ford, and Benjamin Matthew Luna, who was in the GMC, sustained grave injuries, the lawsuit stated. The families of Garms and Hill, also with Brew and Luna, allege in their lawsuit numerous accidents had happened at the same intersection because of the obstructed sign, and the city of Odessa was aware of that. As the Ford entered the intersection, the GMC, which was also traveling at a high rate of speed on 52nd Street, crossed the intersection, the report stated. The front end of the GMC struck the driver's side of the Ford, and both vehicles proceeded toward the northeast corner of the intersection. Quick Hits Downtown Odessa Valentine's Contest. Downtown Odessa Incorporated has scheduled a Valentine's contest through today. Visit five downtown businesses and upload the photos and add hashtag Downtown Odessa on Instagram for a chance to win a one-weekend stay at the Odessa Marriott or a couple's revival retreat at Revival Float Spa. Visit tinyurl.com/2S4F8W8Z. Sweetheart Adoption Week, the Odessa Animal Shelter, 910 West 42nd Street has scheduled a Sweethearts Week special adoption event today through Friday. Adoption fee is $27. Visit tinyurl.com/BDFCWPDB. Free tax assistance. The Ector County Northside Senior Center, 1225 Adams Avenue, has scheduled free tax assistance for seniors from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays through April 11th. Appointment is required. For more information or to make an appointment, call 432-337-5281. For the love of technology, the Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled a For the Love of Technology event from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. today. There will be giveaways, face painting, crafts, and more. The library will also open long-term checkouts for an assortment of tablets and hotspots. Visit tinyurl.com/2p8weyju. PPOA Valentine's Day Dinner and Comedy. The PPOA Professional Police Officers Association of Odessa has scheduled a night of comedy with James Johann today at the MCM Elegante Waterfront Atrium Room, 5200 East University Boulevard. The doors open at 6:30 p.m. Dinner will be served at 7 p.m. and the show will start at 7:45 p.m. Tickets are $50 per person, with tables for eight available, starting at $400. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/4HWVKYD8. Spotlight Party, Little Woodrow's Midland, 3415 North Loop 250 West Midland, has scheduled a spotlight party at 7 p.m. today. Rock the Colors Red, Taken, Just Here for the Shaken, Yellow, Depends Who's Asking, or Green, Hey Good Lookin'. Visit tinyurl.com/3D4JNFJR. Wow Lunch, First Odessa, 311 West 8th Street, has scheduled a Women's Only Wednesday lunch from noon to 1 p.m. Wednesday. There will be ribeye steak, baked potatoes, rolls, and dessert. Tickets are $10 per person at the door. Visit tinyurl.com/YP9T8TPW. Trustees to hear demographic presentation. Presentations on a demographic study, choice schools, and the development office are on the agenda for the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees workshop at 6 p.m. today, February 14th, in the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Georgia Leonard with Davis Demographics will present findings from their demographic study showing where people live and the growth of the district. The purpose of the report is to identify and inform the district of the demographic trends occurring within the community, supplemental agenda material said. This will assist the district in making facility adjustments that may be necessary to accommodate the potential student population shifts and the need for potential attendance zone boundary changes and/or the construction of additional capacity, the material detailed. Application for choice schools, formerly known as magnet schools, in ECISD have increased from 2,607 in 2022-23 to 4,008 for 2023-24, a 53.7% rise from last year. The presentation also indicates the board will discuss looking at ways to improve, offer more middle school choices, provide professional and learning support, share school-specific findings with campus leadership teams, strengthen district oversight and support, and expand the International Baccalaureate Program. The program website said the IB Continuum of Programs is designed to develop well-rounded individuals who can respond to today's challenges with optimism and an open mind. Development Office, whose goal is to engage the community in support of the district's instructional programs through successful fundraising and communications to help us meet the goals of our growing student population, the material said. Additionally, policy updates also will be discussed relating to emergency plans, student, parent complaints and grievances, and student discipline. New hires bolster research efforts in West Texas. The Borderlands Research Institute, BRI, at Sol Ross State University is expanding its team with the addition of two new hires in January 2023. Bill Adams has come aboard as Associate Director of Operations, a new role designed to provide support to the growing organization. Maureen J. Frank also joined the team in January as the James A. Buddy Davidson Charitable Foundation Endowed Professor and Associate Professor of Conservation Biology, a news release said. Since its inception 15 years ago, BRI has expanded its research and outreach capacities and added new programs such as the Center for Land Stewardship and Stakeholder Engagement. There's so much to do. It really speaks to the conservation need of the region, and we're fortunate to be able to pull together such quality people with the help of our endowments and donors, said Dr. Lewis A. Havison, the Dan Allen Hughes Jr. Endowed Director of BRI. Frank brings new breath to BRI's Bird Conservation Program. She first came to Texas for her undergraduate degree and graduated with a B.S. in Wildlife Ecology from Texas A&M University in 2012. She then moved to Logan, Utah for graduate school. Her dissertation focused on the ecology of three migratory water birds, eared grebes, Wilson's phalaropes, and red-necked phalaropes, that rely on the Great Salt Lake as a staging area before flying south for the winter. She graduated from Utah State University with her Ph.D. in 2016 and returned to Texas to work for the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service as a wildlife extension specialist. Her extension work focused mainly on non-game species and helping small acreage landowners understand wildlife management options. She was also involved in efforts to connect landowners with ecotourism opportunities such as birding. Frank looks forward to focusing on conservation issues facing the Trans-Pecos region. I'm intrigued by how much remains unknown out here. There are so many niche habitats like the riparian areas, which are so fascinating and valuable as a desert setting, said Dr. Frank. Frank's primary interest remains connecting people to the land in a way that encourages conservation, and her research interests include grassland bird research, working land conservation, and science communication. The newly created Associate Director of Operations role was designed to boost organizational capacity and efficiency. The position will support all aspects of BRI's mission, which is to help conserve the natural resources of the Chihuahuan Desert borderlands through research, education, and outreach. Adams brings experience from a 20-plus year career in wildlife management, spanning from Florida to multiple regions across Texas. His move to Alpine marks the achievement of a lifelong dream to return to the area after first encountering the region as a range and wildlife management graduate student at Sol Ross State University in 1999. In his extensive work as a biologist and project leader with Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, he worked on diverse projects including quail research, habitat management, public hunting opportunities, public outreach, and habitat restoration. His team and partners managed approximately 275,000 acres of habitat supporting wildlife populations, public hunting opportunities, and research projects scattered among 8 wildlife management areas in East Texas. In addition to on-the-ground conservation, Adams was responsible for a wide variety of operational and administrative processes. I'm looking forward to facilitating the conservation of native wildlife and habitats in the Trans-Pecos, and I'm here to serve, Adams said. Since 2007, the Borderland Research Institute has encouraged effective land stewardship of the Chihuahuan Desert. Housed at Sol Ross State University, the Borderlands Research Institute builds on a long-lasting partnership with private landowners. The university's Natural Resource Program, co-operating state, federal, and non-governmental organizations, and other stakeholders. Through research, education, and outreach, the Borderlands Research Institute is helping to conserve the last frontier of Texas and the Southwest, the release said. Fab Lab to host closing reception. The second annual Maker Show, presented by the Fab Lab Permian Basin at Odessa College, will hold a closing reception at 4 p.m. today, February 14th, at the Phillips Goff Gallery in Sedate Hall, and announce the winners of this year's exhibition. The exhibit showcases users and items of the Fab Lab and demonstrates the possibilities of beginner to advanced creative journeys. We had almost twice as many entries this year as we did for the first Maker Show last year. This year we had 49 entries, 27 individuals submitted their work, various individuals also submitted multiple entries, and some makers worked collaboratively on entries, Fab Lab Director Adriana Moreno said in a news release. Most of the makers, with the exception of one, a University of North Texas student, are local, including Odessa College students and employees, Fab Lab members and employees, UTPB students and employees, and general community members. Through the use of digital fabrication technology and traditional mediums such as CNC machines, 3D printers, laser engravers, cutters, and the vinyl cutter, the participants created various works, which include items such as ceramic pieces, paintings, jewelry, and prints. Prior to Tuesday's event, a panel of judges voted on the entries in the following categories: engineering, art, mixed media, kids, best machine use, external Fab Lab, maker space, personal CNC or at-home equipment. The awards will also include an award for the people's choice. Our mission at the Fab Lab is to instill and foster the maker spirit in everyone. Any maker at any skill level, from kids to at-home hobbyists or entrepreneurs, artists, and professional craftsmen, can take advantage of the resources available to them at the Fab Lab, Marino said in the release.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.